This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Lawmakers are in Raleigh today for a special session in the aftermath of Hurricane Florence. 28 of the state's 100 counties are under federal disaster declaration, and state agencies are still tallying up much of the damage as floodwaters recede. Jeff DeBeer is at the legislature today. He is WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Welcome back, Jeff.
Good to be here, Frank.
Where are we in terms of storm cleanup?
Yeah, I mean, there are many prongs to this. There's the environmental piece. There is the road closure piece. And, you know, that's much improved at this point. There are still a few scattered closings of roads and bridges in Robeson and New Hanover County. According to the Department of Transportation, it's mainly bridges, unsurprisingly, in the need of most repair. And then we also think about schools, that being a big variable in this whole getting back to some sense of normalcy effort. Robeson County schools are still out. They are scheduled to return on Monday. Ditto for Brunswick County. Pendrin, New Hanover also still out. So those school closures, part of where we're at and also part of what's going on here today.
And we're starting to see some financial damage assessments. What are the tallies looking like?
Short answer is it's still too early to tell. I mean, there have been estimates that are, several billions of dollars. And we're going to get a better sense of the total damage as assessors and crews can get into schools that are damaged and private homes and privately owned buildings that have been damaged, and also some of the publicly owned buildings that, just because there have been so many thousands of them, they don't have an up-to-date, accurate assessment of the true damage at this point. So we're starting to see some of the aid, federally speaking, state speaking, move, but this is going to be a very long process.
All right. And so state lawmakers are in Raleigh today to try to come up with some provisions to help in the short term. What kinds of proposals are they talking about?
So what's happening today is they're back. It's supposed to be just a one-day special session. We believe it is going to be just a one-day special session. At this point, we're not expecting any surprises. Of course, that's something we have seen in the past with these special sessions. Two bills are expected to move today. The first is really focused on education, and it's trying to deal with school days that have been lost, right? So we just mentioned there's some counties that are not even back yet. There's also a state requirement for public schools to be in session for 185 days. So they're going to provide an opportunity for the schools to either not make up those days if they want to waive those, or to figure out a way to make up some of those days. So there's the education component. And in line with that, there's also, it's in a different bill, but under the education umbrella, there's also this issue of paying teachers for time that was missed, paying cafeteria workers. That's something they've set aside money for. And then there are a number of other things. So we think about the DMV, what they're going to do today. What's been set forth in two pieces of legislation is to waive fees if people need to get new records or get things that were lost in the storm. They're also going to extend the voter registration day. The deadline was October 12th. They're going to extend that to October 15th. So a number of initial things, and then again, there will be more. And I'll just quickly put a number on this. Today, they're going to appropriate, it's a $6.5 million appropriation for education, if I've got it, and then a $50 million appropriation for Florence disaster relief. And what that is that will complement federal money. That's going to go into the Florence relief pot that can go toward anybody that is that's applying for federal grant money. And this, of course, comes a few days after the U.S. House passed more than a $1.1 billion package for Florence relief.
And legislative leaders have already begun to realize that they're not going to get it all done in one day. They may have to come back, particularly as damage assessments become more refined.
That's right. Initially, we were told next week. It looks now like it's going to be October 15th. Then my expectation would be sometime in what we will consider the lame duck period after the election, but before the lawmakers return for the long session in January.
We are seeing a rare display of bipartisanship in all of this, are we not?
We are. It feels weird, I'll be honest with you, Frank. Lawmakers are focused. They are positive. I think some of this is, look at the calendar. We're 5 weeks from an election. So I certainly was struck by two things today. One, sitting in the Senate chamber and looking at almost every single set of eyes in the room focused on whichever senator was speaking in that moment. It's not uncommon for senators to be on their phone or working on notes or not paying attention because it's somebody in the other party. Today, they truly were locked in. I've also noticed a lot on social media today. Some lawmakers, you know, making their own statements from their desks, from here in the General Assembly. They've had staff members taking videos of them and saying, here's what we're doing for you, the victims of Hurricane Florence, and really trying to take a very proactive approach to what is playing out here today.
And as you point out, we are 5 weeks out from the November yes. midterm elections, perhaps the most watched and most significant midterm elections in the 21st century. Tell us what this means for North Carolina.
The big picture here, the big question remains these supermajorities, which the Republicans, they, of course, won the majorities in 2010. They've held power in the legislature since 2011, but they further cemented that power with by gaining supermajorities in 2012. So what is at stake here is whether or not the Republicans can defend these veto-proof majorities. Democrats would need to pick up 6 seats in the Senate or 4 seats in the House to undo that. Now, Democrats and Republicans are of the mind at this point that Democrats have a pretty good opportunity to end the supermajority on the House side. And effectively what that does is we think big picture about governance. Roy Cooper, his veto suddenly has more teeth. So since he took office, he's vetoed, I believe it's 25 bills. Now, 20 of those have been overridden by the legislature. If the Democrats were to pick up half a dozen or 8 or 10 seats in the midterms, what that does is it allows Cooper to more frequently sustain a veto and force the Republican hand here at the legislature to work with him. So we think about the big things of 2019, like the budget and the things that the governor continues to, you know, talk about, campaign about, however you want to phrase it, teacher funding and education funding at large. And also there's this big thing dangling out here, which we've talked about before, and that's Medicaid expansion. And it'll be interesting to see if the Democrats can end the supermajority, how they respond from a, I guess you would call it a tactical standpoint of saying, all right, Republicans, we're gonna do some of what you want, but you know, we're holding firm on this Medicaid piece. I think if the Democrats can end the supermajority, we're gonna hear a lot. And you and I are gonna be talking a lot about Medicaid come January.
And bills like some of the more controversial bills like HB2 yes. would never see the light of day if you didn't have a veto, if you suddenly lost that veto-proof House.
No, they wouldn't. They could be filed. There's no limit on what lawmakers can file here, but no, those kinds of divisive, controversial social measures are going to be far less frequent or just totally gone.
And let's say the fact is, and you point this out, that there are something like new district boundaries in 100
That's right.
state legislative counties in the state, right? So this is significant. Where there are counties, districts that we've never seen before, essentially, right?
That is absolutely correct. Since, you know, Republicans won in 2010, they drew the new maps in 2011. And of course, there have been several legal challenges to both state and federal maps. But a good number of legislative seats, I want to say it was 28 total, were ruled unconstitutional gerrymanders. But of course, when you change a boundary, a district, it is surrounding it is touching others. So you have to navigate and you have to change the political lines of those that it's touching. So, you know, political scientists and analysts say when politicians are most vulnerable is when you've got a first-term incumbent or when you've got new boundaries. And there are a number of those folks here that are running kind of, you know, under those set of circumstances. And you've got what is historically supposed to be a good year for the party in the minority. So, yeah, about 80 seats in the House are under some sort of change, the district itself. And on the Senate side, it's 37 out of 50. So, yeah, a lot of fresh districts.
And, of course, constitutional amendments are on the ballot, and there's some controversy. 6 proposed constitutional amendments to the November ballot. A bipartisan group of former governors came out against 2 of them, but then they ran this ad, which became controversial.
Take a closer look at the constitutional amendments Raleigh lawmakers put on the ballot this fall. Every former Chief Justice and every former governor, Democrats and Republicans, all recommend voting no.
As part of an ad against proposed constitutional amendments, but one former governor who was referenced in that ad, Pat McCrory, Republican, took issue with the ad. What happened, Jeff?
Well, he was not pleased that the ad campaign, or at least that particular ad, was admonishing all six of the proposed constitutional amendments because, as listeners will remember, one of the proposed constitutional amendments is to require photo identification in order to vote. And this is something that the former governor, McCrory, has long been in support of. So we talk about lawmakers from different parties getting together and agreeing, you know, it can only last so long or it can only go so far. So they actually quickly changed this ad to just tweak the language a little bit right at the top, which is an interesting change.
It is, because he is definitely opposed to two of those amendments, and that right. has to do with executive authority, and that's a power struggle between the legislature and the governor. And there, all the governors on both parties were agreed, former governors, but only those two and not the others. So there was a change. So here is the original language. It went like this.
Take a closer look at the constitutional amendments Raleigh lawmakers put on the ballot this fall.
And right. they changed it to this.
Take a closer look at two constitutional amendments Raleigh lawmakers put on the ballot this fall.
Okay. So there we go. This fall. Any sign that the last week's contentious hearings, and of course it's still going on, the story for Supreme Court Justice nominee Brett Kavanaugh, will that have an impact on the elections here in North Carolina, do you think?
I think it's too early to tell what kind of impact specifically that will have. Certainly people are talking about it. The North Carolina Democratic Party was actually running ads against some Republican incumbents in suburban districts prior to Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh's testimony last Thursday, trying to pair some of the state lawmakers here who were in support of Kavanaugh. But it's early to tell, and there are a number of factors that are going to contribute to what plays out in November.
All right. Jeff DeBerry, WUNC Capital Bureau Chief. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Just ahead, she spent her teen years with her dad but didn't get to know him until 25 years after his death. Jo Mader joins us to talk about her new book on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.